Good afternoon, and welcome along to Raising Teenagers to Love the Lord. Bill was kind of on the money. This is not one of those electives that you're just overjoyed to do. It's a little bit of a scary thing to sort of put yourself out there and talk to you about your family. We'd start by introducing ourselves in terms of our interest in the topic. Our interest in the topic actually began when we were teenagers. So we thought we'd sort of show you pictures of what we looked like back then.
This is us on a Christian camp when I think we might have been about 15, do you reckon?
Somewhere about that age. And it's just a great reminder that at one level we've grown up, although physically not so much for me. But just that reminder that we were teenagers once, and if you're going to be parenting teenagers, it's actually something that you've gone through. It's something that you struggled through. It's a time of life that's just weird and entertaining and awkward, and yet it's lots of fun at the same time. And so it's kind of handy to remember that. And so part of our interest here today is actually just having been teenagers. As we go through today, we're going to be dealing with different sort of aspects of how to parent teenagers. My interest is going to be more the biblical side, the theological side. And Anna?
So I'll be taking you a little bit through teen development. So I do lecturing in education, so in teaching and learning, so that's a little bit more my space.
So I'm a dad and Anna's an academic, so that's kind of our way into parenting there. But we thought we'd actually let you know, here are our kids in the wild, and one of the photos is the way they prefer to be recognised. And the other there is them as they actually exist in one way or another, where they're kind of most of the time sleepy and in love with drama. So we've got three teenage kids at the moment, but give it another month or two, we'll have four teenage kids. We really love parenting them. However, again, this is not actually elective we were overly excited about doing. When I was asked by Bill and the team if we could run this sort of elective, I just said, look, go find someone else. This is just not something we're qualified to do. And they came back and said, no, look, we really would like you to do it. And I said, look, there's no way my wife is going to go for that. That's just not going to work. And so
I said, no way. No.
In fact, it was one of those weeks when we were asked, and so Anna's words were, you have got to be kidding. We cannot do that. And in all seriousness, although we love our kids and we really have enjoyed parenting them, parenting is not always easy. We are on a very, very familiar basis with the principal at the schools that our kids go to. And in all seriousness, your kids will have to be suspended a lot before they catch up with ours. And that's not necessarily to say that our kids are the most difficult kids in the world, but we are very familiar with the discipline system of high schools and suspensions and being expelled. Our kids literally have destroyed classrooms at schools. And so while we really do love and enjoy parenting them, it has been difficult, and we don't often feel qualified to speak on the topic. And so our way, really, of being able to talk to you today was actually to start by asking God for forgiveness, thank you, by just admitting sin and failure, by actually recognising that our way into parenting is actually the grace and forgiveness of God, and our parenting starts with Him forgiving us. And, of course, that's great practice when we then need to forgive them. We're not the experts in the sense that everything we're doing has been amazing. And it's also just worth commenting that as we go through and give a couple of thoughts today, just recognising that our family is not your family. Families are going to be different. And particularly when it comes to comparing families, that's very rarely, if ever, helpful. And so we're trying to give you some strategies and some goals that hopefully you'll find helpful. But when it comes to the practice, you may or may not want to copy us and have good reasons to do that either way. So
we saw the aim of parenting as being the goal of parenting is to raise God's kids and ours to become self-aware servants of Christ. So this is what we're going to run through today. This is a bit of an outline of where we're going. We'll chat a bit about knowing God and knowing ourselves. And then we'll go on to knowing our teens and their knowing your influence and how to embrace the opportunity of the teen years.
There'll also be a couple of exercises if we get time we'll get you to do along the way. And we're hoping to end with a question time. Of course, you won't have any and that's fine, but we will end with that opportunity. Starting with parenting, raising your teen, starting with the knowledge of God. Now, the reason we're starting here is blatant plagiarism. When I was at Bible College, I was forced to read Calvin's Institutes. Calvin is perhaps the most influential, or at least one of the most influential authors of the last 500 years. And I remember being super unimpressed when I read the opening words to his book. And Calvin's Institutes, his most famous book, begins like this. This is the opening heading. Without knowledge of self, there is no knowledge of God. And then he begins his book by saying, nearly all wisdom we possess, that is to say true and sound wisdom, consists of two parts, the knowledge of God and knowledge of ourselves. And again, I was thoroughly unimpressed when I read that. I thought, really, you are the guru and that's all you've got. And I just sort of kept reading. But I've kept coming back to that ever since. I really think Calvin is onto something there, that actually the key to wisdom in life in general, let alone the key to wisdom in parenting, is knowing God, and of course of Christians, I'm hoped we're convinced of that, but equally knowing yourself. And I'm hopefully going to show you how the two of those play off one another and how you actually need to be really aware of both before you actually have a chance to raise teenagers in the fear and love of the Lord. So, starting with knowing God, what does God have to say about parenting? Very little. It's actually quite a surprise when you look through the Bible and have a look at what God has to say on the topic. There's not much there, so the exam can't be all that hard, can it? There's very little information in the Bible when it comes to parenting. And so here we go. If you go to the book of Ephesians, it's a great letter on how to serve God. And Paul's word on parenting in the whole letter is this. Fathers, don't stir up anger in your children, but bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. How do you raise teenagers? You bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. That's kind of all you get. What I love is, if we go to the next slide, kids get far more instruction than parents. And the instructions that kids get, and I just keep pointing this out to my kids all the time, I get like one line of what to do. You get quite a few, and it's this, obey. Just do as you're told. And then it actually goes on, because this is right, verse 2, honour your father and mother. We've got that highlighted on the fridge, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may have a long life in the land. It's kind of an odd little order when you think about it. Lots more to kids than parents. Parents don't stir up your kids, whereas kids obey them so that it will go well in the land. Now, why so little and why so late in the letter? Well, I want to suggest to you that when it comes to raising kids and raising teenagers, really the thing that you need to know is that the key to parenting teenagers is actually trusting Jesus. It's actually you following Jesus. And I reckon that's most of what parenting teenagers is about. So the reason there's not much instruction in the letter on how to raise kids is because it presupposes everything in the letter that you've already read. So if we go back to the beginning of the letter, what's the letter all about? Well, it's all about impressing on us the key to life, the purpose of life. What's life all about? Well, it's all about everything in heaven and on earth being put under one head, that is being put under one authority, being put under Jesus Christ himself. What's the key to life? Everyone living with Jesus as their Lord. That's what life is all about. He goes on to almost repeat himself, but in different words in verse 12, that we might exist to the praise of his glory. And then if we were to keep reading through the letter, the question becomes, well, how do you do that? And there's beautiful stuff in chapter 2 about doing the good works that God has provided for you to do. There's wonderful stuff in chapter 3 about how God brings different groups of people together, where you have unity, not uniformity. You've got different people groups, Jews and Gentiles. They're brought together with their differences, but they're united around God. You then get to chapter 4. You're told to walk in a manner worthy of the Lord. That becomes a little bit of a mantra. You get to chapter 5, and we're taught how to do some of the really close relationships. We're told about husbands rather, who are to love their wives, and wives who are to submit to their husbands. And then after that is when we get to kids. That is, presupposing that you're walking in a manner worthy of the Lord, presupposing that you're actually caring for the people of God, presupposing that you're a husband first, because you'll never be a better father than you are husband or better mother than you are wife, presupposing that you're actually following God there, then the advice of parenting follows. And actually what's fascinating about the advice that Paul gives, if we jump to the next slide, he plagiarises Deuteronomy. That's always a good thing to do when you're teaching people how to live. And the whole thrust of Deuteronomy when it comes to parenting is, in Deuteronomy 5, they're retold the Decalogue, the 10 words, the 10 commandments, and they're told the 10 commandments so that it would go well for them and for their children. That is, the gift that parents can give to their kids is to listen to God and to live for God. Godliness is the great gift that you can give to your kids. What's Parenting 101 of teenagers? You walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, and you make it so normal for them to actually see that model that it's like when you come into church and you just know where your seats are. You know how we've got our seats at church and you just instinctively go there, and if someone else goes there, it's a problem. The gift you can give your kids is the gift of godliness, where you raise them in the fear and instruction of the Lord, and for their good, you follow God. You trust Jesus. You model Christianity to them. And so we've got a quote here from one of our favourite authors when it comes to parenting. And this book by Tim and by Ed, this is one that we went through early on. It was really helpful for us. Your family can show how great it is to live under God's reign of love. What's the goal of parenting? What's the goal of raising teenagers? To show your kids how awesome it is to submit to Jesus, to model to them and to inspire them to want to do what they're told when it comes to Jesus. Because you're personally convinced that when you do what you're told, that is when you listen to Jesus, that is the best life possible. That's the 101 for raising teenagers. Show them. Show them how to follow Jesus. Train them. Godliness will be your greatest gift to them. You need to have knowledge of God, but equally you need to have knowledge of yourself. And this is an idea that a lot of people who write books on parenting picks up on. Paul Tripp is a guy who's well worth reading on a whole bunch of subjects, but particularly on parenting. And he goes so far as to say, it's a waste of time for us to think about strategies for parenting our teens without first examining ourselves. True wisdom consists of knowledge of God and knowledge of self. And you can have all the knowledge of God you like, but if you don't know yourself, if you don't know why you do what you do, well, then you're always going to trip up when it comes to following God. What do I mean by that? Well, the example in my life I'm always reminded of is when I first got married to my beautiful wife. The first couple of years of marriage, I was just reminded how godly I am. It was just one of those moments that being with Anna just showed me the superiority of my godliness, just in the way that I was just above her when it came to following Jesus. And the moments where I would see this was things like Bible studies, where Anna would be reluctant to go to the Bible study group. She would still be a little bit tired, wasn't keen to go, whereas I just wanted to go. And so, of course, I just put that down to my knowledge of God. I know God. I know this is important to him. He's the reason I want to go to the Bible studies. I must be godly. Then I got to know myself. Turns out the reason I wanted to go to Bible studies is because I'm an extrovert.
And actually, I'm an introvert.
It just didn't actually have anything to do with godliness. I was convinced I was serving God, but actually my motivation for going to the Bible study group was serving myself. Now, if one of the primary gifts you can give to your kids is modelling godliness, but actually what you're doing is just doing whatever you want to do, what are you modelling to your kids? You're modelling serving your own idols. If you don't know yourself, it becomes really, really difficult to serve God. So that's one of the areas that I needed to get to know myself in. And Paul Tripp sort of puts it like this. In terms of getting to know yourself, you need to get to know what your idols are. That is, what are the areas in your life that you want to be worshipped in? What are the things that are really important to you? And he gives some suggestions: respect, appreciation, success, and control. And he shows over and over again the way that parents chase these, think they're actually trying to raise kids to follow God, but really they're training their kids to worship them in these areas, and it has disastrous results. So mine is appreciation. One of the quotes I love giving to my kids, you know, if you get the chance to chat to them, just ask them, what's the go of your dad being a river? One of the quotes I love giving them from Lawrence of Arabia is, though the Turks pay me in gold, yet I am poor, for I am a river to my people. Just love the poetry of that. You know, everything I have, it just flows out to you kids. Aren't I just generous? And you can see how I just love the self-worship of that. Like everything you kids see before you at the table, that's all just from me. That's just mine. That's just the generosity pouring out from me to you. Now, why do I want to be generous? Well, not because of grace and not because God is generous to me, but I want the appreciation.
That's why you're a two-way river.
Yes.
Territory say you can only flow one way, and he says, no, it can go in different
ways. That's what I say, like, I'm a river to you, but it's two ways. You have to give praise back to me. And they go, that's not our river's great, Dad. And I go, yes, it is. And the story sort of goes downhill from there. So you can see how my idol could be mistaken for godliness, but it's still an idol. And if I don't know myself, I'm going to find it harder to serve God.
And for me, my idol would be control. Not so much because I want everybody to do what I want them to do, but because I like peace and calm and quiet. And so I might be thinking that I'm doing this to have a peaceful and godly kind of inspiration for my children, but it's not. It's just because I want it to be quiet. So, yeah, that's a trap for me. We don't have quiet children.
They're a little bit more like their dad. So we're going to get to know God. We're going to get to know ourselves. And primarily what we're doing is modelling godliness to our kids. And so that means Parenting 101 is read your Bible, pray, practice grace, practice forgiveness, model repentance in all the forms where you actually admit that you're wrong. Where you say to your kids, you know what, I stuffed up there. If you can't model actually what it's looked like to ask for forgiveness and then to receive it, then how are your kids going to do it? You're actually going to model to them what it looks like to be a godly servant of Jesus. You're going to model good time-making decisions. How much are you going to serve a church? How much are you going to work? These are actually all instinctive and vital to parenting as you're actually modeling the wise life to your kids. Know God and know yourself. Oh, yes, we do have time. What we want you to do now, actually, is just take a moment or two. I haven't rabbited on for too long, so this is good. We want you to take a moment or two to maybe get to know yourself. If you're here with someone else that knows you well, perhaps chat to them as well, but you identify your idols. What are the things that could look like worshipping God but actually are just idols to you? See how well you know yourself and your own heart. You can maybe bounce off Tripp's ideas of the idols that he thinks are out there. Or perhaps you could actually just ask yourself, what are actually the areas in my life that I want my kids to follow? Because you're modelling Christianity to them. What are the areas that I want them to follow and what are the areas I don't want them to follow? Remember, you do have areas worth being followed in because you're here and you're thinking about how to do it. So spend some time doing one of those and we'll just spend 2 or 3 minutes on that and then we'll come back together.
All right, we're going to move on now to a little bit of development, a little bit of the developmental side of adolescence. Now, I will let you know that I normally do this over an entire trimester, so you're getting like 14 weeks worth in like, it's not quite like that, but it's very skimmed on the surface. But basically, we'll start with physical development. This is probably the more obvious one that we all recognise with our teens. So puberty hits, doesn't it? So during adolescence, we see children growing up, growing out, growing in lots of different ways. And while there is what you would call a common or typical trajectory that our growth will take, there is no normal. So the idea of being normal, which our kids all desperately want to be normal, don't they? Is this normal? Is this normal? There is no normal. Normal doesn't exist. There's actually a great video called Norma and Norman, all about the fact that normal doesn't exist. It's just a mythical average. But what we can do is we can actually then understand what's typical and what's common, and that can be really helpful as well. it's really tricky for teens as their bodies are changing and growing, and they often feel very awkward in their bodies, and they feel awkward both with their own bodies and their bodies compared to other people's bodies as well. As parents during this stage, apart from providing lots of deodorant, it's really helpful to remember what it was like for you to be a teen. So maybe think back to how awkward you maybe felt. I do remember one day having to go to school and being in tears because I had this one, and told you, I think so, I've even told you the story. I had this one bubble on the side of my hair when I was trying to do a side pony, and I just couldn't, it was just beside, I was beside myself because everyone was going to notice my bubble. And that's actually a very real thing for our teens, and so not dismissing those things as well. But it's very, it can be a very awkward stage. So remember back to what it was like when you were a teen. It's also really important in terms of physical development to be their information source. So as we mentioned earlier, a little bit of my being a bit of an introvert is I'm a bit of a private person. I don't like having tricky conversations, and teenagers need and want information, and that requires some tricky conversations. So take a deep breath and have those conversations with your kids, especially around relationships, sexual development, that kind of thing. They need their information from somewhere, and you are the best source for them to get it from. If that's an area that you want a bit of support with, I encourage you to look at Patricia Werra-Kuhn's work. So she has a book for 10 to 14-year-olds called Growing Up by the Book. It's more of like a dictionary-type resource where the kids can actually look up what they're interested in and learn a little bit about that area. You need to learn about those things too, because there might be some things that you don't know or remember. And then in the teens, there's one for, I believe it's mature age, so 15 plus, called Teen Sex by the Book. And that can be quite confronting, but really good for you to know and talk to your kids about. One of the biggest physical changes, however, we'll go to the next one, is the brain. This is what's actually doing a huge amount of development that we don't actually see. So you'll see on the slide down the bottom there, 0 to 3, there's quite a large amount of brain development, and we see that in kids, don't we? So 0 to 3, they learn how to talk, they learn how to walk, they learn how to do everything. Their brains are just firing on all cylinders. And then they do learn and grow in that in-between stage, but then between 9 and 14, there's another big burst of brain development. So what actually happens in this stage is what we would call a remodeling. So this is where, but maybe a bit of a spring clean. So they're getting rid of all the connections that they actually don't really need anymore. So it's called pruning. So we get rid of the connections we don't really need, and the ones that we do need and we want to keep, we actually make them stronger. So they get a myelin sheath placed around them, and it makes the connections between the neurons stronger and faster. And so it's a better functioning brain is what we end up with in the end. So for this to happen, they actually need sleep, would you believe it? Our teenagers need to sleep. So the recommendation is 8 to 10 hours. I don't know that our teens generally get 8 to 10 hours. We can encourage our kids to be getting the sleep because it's really important for their brain function to function better and for all of us to function with them. It would be very helpful. Another key thing to mention here is that our brains actually keep developing. So the remodeling keeps taking place until they're about 25. So and don't have a full adult brain until about their mid-20s. And in terms of how the brain develops, the last part of their brain to develop is this bit at the front where they actually do all their good thinking. So the good thinking and reasoning and the planning and all that stuff, that's the last bit to develop. So that's why we see our teens still, you know, jumping out of trees to check how deep the water might be. Someone may have done that when they were a teen and broken their ankle. But as parents, in terms of thinking about what this means to you as parents in terms of their brain, remember they're not actually an adult yet. So they will get there, but they're not there yet. And we just can't expect them to relate to us like parents, like, I mean, like adults, as much as we would love that. And the second thing is, yeah, to make the most of this opportunistic time while all these connections are being made and strengthened. That's your whirlwind on cognitive development. Social and emotional development. You'll notice these are actually all very linked. And so when we talk about development, they are very much overlapping, but I'll separate them to be hopefully a little bit helpful. So social and development, social and emotional development, the hormones often get the blame for this, but it's more likely the brain functioning that's still actually all going on and the remodeling that's going on that's actually the cause for a lot of the things that are going on with their especially their emotions. So during the teen years, there's a social reorientation that takes place. So your teens are developing this independence. They're moving away from you. You'll start to see they care a lot more about what their peers think than what you think. And that's very, very normal, typical. There's no such thing as normal. So part of the social changes include them trying to figure out who they are. So what is their identity? I have had one of my kids say to me, I just don't know who I am. I don't know who I want to be. And that's great. Great, I'll tell you who you are. I'll help you out with that one. But they want to figure out who they are, and they're recognising their differences and that they do actually want to be different in certain ways as well. They're figuring out what responsibilities they might want to have, what experiences they want to have, what their own values are going to be apart from you. And one of the biggest differences from what we experienced as teens is this connection to social media. So while we'll get to it a little bit later in terms of what they turn to and their influences, it certainly will influence them, but they are more connected than ever before, but they're more lonely because they're actually not connected. So they're connected in a very different way, and that we need to consider that even if they're in their room and they're still connected with other people, it's a very different form of connection and can be really lonely for them. The emotional changes that you're likely to see in your teens are those of varying moods and feelings. Again, brain development and hormonal fluctuations can account for some of this. They'll be really sensitive as to what others say. If you've got teens, you're just like, yep. And also how others are perceiving them. They're really big on that real self-conscious area. Stage of enormous, a time when we need to be boosting our team's self-esteem. So there's lots of voices that they're going to hear. We need to help our voice be a positive one. So as parents, it's important to listen to your teens, which can be really hard. It can be really hard when their tiny, insignificant problem is ending their world. But it actually really is ending their world at that point in time, and it probably was ending your world when you were a teen, like my little bubble on the side of my head. Oh, it's distressing me. I hadn't remembered that. But sometimes your kids will just want you to listen to them, and we need to create space for that. We need them to feel heard. And, yes, we do need to advise them, but we need to spend a lot of time doing the listening first, because that might be all they actually want. It's also important as parents to know when to seek further help and further support for your teens. So part of this is knowing what your teens typically like, so that then you can recognise when things aren't right. And I like to think of seeking further support as a strength. There's a real strength that we can get from others. We're not doing this parenting thing alone. And the whole it takes a village to raise a child, I seem to think our village is very different to what it used to be. We are in our own houses, but Jacques and Elida, they're part of our village. They, you know, they're involved with our kids at church. They run our youth group. Our youth group leaders have been invaluable to our children, and I consider them as part of our village and they're part of our support system. But you might need to be seeking out chaplains, you might need to be seeking out psychologists or psychiatrists, those kind of things. Take note, mental health is actually a really big concern for our teens, so seek support if you need it. It's not a failure on your behalf, it's just getting that support and using your village. Oh, it's still me. All right, let's go to the next one. All right, so and this is, I won't take you through this in any great depth, but Bronfenbrenner was a theorist when it came to child development. And so this is a very, it's just an image of his understanding. And so what we have here is we have the fact that there is a child, the child in the middle of their, what we call their ecosystem or where they live, all of these things outside of them are going to influence on them and their development. So in the middle, I thought this was the most teen-looking picture that I could find. You'll see straight around the child is the family, classroom, religious settings and peer group. That's different in different images that you see. But basically you have the teen and you have their immediate people around them. Then as you move out, it's kind of like nested systems, but it's far more nuanced than that and very interrelating. But all of those things are going to influence on your child, so it's really important to know all those things. So you need to know your child's world, and part of that is listening to them, but know their friends. When their friends come around, talk to them. Find out lots of things about them. It's really important to know those influences. Know what they're learning at school, know what the content is, and know how to shape that differently if you'd like to shape that differently. But what I wanted to point out is that family, you guys, you're in that innermost system, okay? It's you're right in close to that child. And I did just a little bit of research because I am a researcher, so why not? So Mission Australia puts out a youth survey every year. And this is taken from a sample of 18,800 children, 15 to 19 across Australia. And this is what they answered in terms of where do young people go to for help with important issues? They go to their friends, they go to their parents. And then there's lots of others. So if you look at the next slide, I thought this was a great one. I know it's a bit blurry, sorry about that. But you see the first one is their friends. So yes, they're really important. That's part of that social reorientation where we're moving away from our parents. But we've got friends, then we go to our parents. And then if you keep looking down, we go relatives, brothers and sisters, partners and if you're on a GP, internet is all the way down the end. Then teacher, social influence, I can't see, read that from there, crikey, media and social media. So all of those things that we actually think are really, that our teens are really using, these are the teens saying, actually, if I have an issue, I'm going to go to my friends and I'm going to go to my parents. So that's a really great place for us to be. So while our kids are developing, we are developing as parents. So many years ago, someone said, and I don't even remember who it was, but kudos to whoever told us this because it was significant for us. They suggested to us that parenting life comes in 6-year cycles. So we have them for roughly 6 years. We were in New South Wales at this time, so it was roughly 6 years up until school. And before they go to school, and this is a time where we're kind of the main providers for our children. And then from 6 to 12, during their primary school years, we are making lots of decisions for our children so they can be involved in our decision-making, but we're generally the main deciders of what sports they can be involved in, what friends they can have for sleepovers, who they might play with, and how late they're going to stay up. We actually had a rule that was whatever, I think this is probably younger than that, but whatever time we hear you in the morning, that's what time you go to bed at night.
That's brilliant.
That's great.
So they learned not to make noise at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So they had to go to bed early. Anyway, that's what I'd like. So from then 12 to 18, so this is the section we're talking about today, so spanning the high school years, this is the stage where we actually step to the side a little bit more and we become more of their coach. So as their coach, we help them make decisions about many things in life, but we kind of do this from the sidelines. So a coach still has rules, but they're not on the field, and the coach always has their eyes on the player. So we encourage and we support, but we're trying to have them take more of the responsibilities for themselves. From 18 to 25, I made that 25 because remember that brain development where they're actually not adults till then, so it might be 30 for some children. But that's about when we get our adult brain, and as parents, we take another step to the side and we're simply like an advisor to our young adults. So as advisors, we are still there for our children while they're figuring out life and how they're going to live, but it's more that they come to us. From 25 onwards, as parents, we become somewhat redundant. Isn't that going to be nice? But that's when they're adults. They're just like us. So it doesn't mean that we no longer advise, but we still go to our parents to ask for advice on things. But at 25 or by 25 as parents, we're wanting to no longer be the primary decision makers for our children.
And look, in one way, really, that's how we think about parenting. We think about parenting as we're trying to raise our kids in the fear and love and knowledge of the Lord. And the goal of parenting is to help them follow Jesus. We think that's what God wants. We need to get to know ourselves along the way. We need to get to know what our idols are so we can make sure it's actually Jesus that we're passing on. But actually, when it comes to the practice of parenting, we want to be aware of our kids, their influences, their brain development. And so we actually want to think through how we're going to parent them in such a way that when they leave home, they're then capable of following Jesus on their own, so to speak. And so again, another way of thinking about our model is just where you stand in relation to your kids. And so again, when they're that 0 to 6, you're sort of, if you like, you're standing over them. You're protecting them. They're reliant on you for everything. You're their world. When they're in that primary school phase, we kind of thought about that as you're almost walking in front of them. A lot of the time, you're telling them what to do. You're saying, follow me. But of course, you're doing that as a follower of Jesus, and you're showing them how wonderful it is to actually live a life of submission. The best life is the life where you do what Jesus tells you to do, where he is your Lord and Saviour, and you're actually showing them the benefits of sitting under someone who is stronger than you and loves you. But then, of course, when we get to this stage of life we're interested in as teenagers, we actually then step to the side, if you like. We're no longer in front of them, so it actually gives them a chance to move ahead at their own speed. And we think what's vital with your teenagers, again, is that you've got a little bit of an idea of when do you think they're going to leave home. So when we lived more in the country, we thought it's very likely either trades or uni or whatever's going to happen that they're going to leave home at 17 or 18. So even though my natural predisposition is to tell my kids what to do, I love being the authoritative dad, I'm not going to be much good to them if I make all the decisions for them and then they send them off to serve Jesus on their own and they've got to start making decisions for themselves when they leave home. And so we're raising our kids in such a way that we're actually walking beside them and giving them practice in the decision-making. And we're allowing them to make some mistakes. We're allowing them to decide things for themselves, like, what time am I going to go to bed? You know, when you're in primary school, we just tell you what to do, but we tell you why. When you're at high school, that becomes more of a negotiation because we're in that transition from permission, can I do this, Dad, to actually problem solving. How am I going to do this, Dad? Can you help me figure it out? And so it's a little nerve-wracking to let teenagers decide when to go to bed, to actually let your kids in year 11 and 12 figure out when am I going to go to bed and when am I going to get out of bed. And you're there at 6 in the morning, at 6:30, at 7 in the morning, at 7:30, at 8 o'clock, and they're not out of bed. And that's a wonderful moment to let them learn decision-making. But of course, when it comes to the important things, you're a coach, you still have rules, you're standing beside them. So when it comes to the family expectations, there are still things that they have to do. And you're making that transition the older they get from, if you like, the discipline side to actually the natural repercussions side. So we still have family expectations. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So you will go to church. You will go to youth group. Oh, you don't enjoy youth group. What a fantastic opportunity to do what you see me do, which is actually go to church to serve others, or at least what I should be doing at church. But we actually want to reward them as they adapt our family values. And so with our oldest two in particular, our oldest boy, again, wonderful youth group, but he was the only teenager at one point, only male. And so going along with him, a 17-year-old guy hanging out with 12, 13-year-old girls, a lot of the time he wasn't enjoying that. And so we wanted to recognise that. Thanks for going anyway. You don't have a choice. But thanks for going along. We really want to reward you for that. we really want to make that worth your while, and we can't necessarily make it worth your while you're there. So what else can we do to make it worth your while to connect to our family values so that when you leave, they can become your family values? And I guess the bit we're trying to stress is we're giving them more and more autonomy, because the next stage is when you're standing behind them. And really, the influence you get when they leave is when they turn around to ask you. You're not beside them, you can't grab them, you're not in front of them, you can't stop them. You're behind them, and it's only when they turn around and ask, and you want to raise them in such a way that they want to ask. And so you've got to pick your battles. So we may or may not have a son that just cannot pick up a wet towel off the floor. It's physically impossible, and it drives us crazy. And we just had to turn it into a game. We just had to say, son, I don't know what is going on, but someone is out to get you. Look what they've done to you again. They have left 5 wet towels on your floor in your room. And in the end, we just had to pick the towels up for him, because that's not the hill we wanted to die on. Because he was getting close enough to leaving home. And you know what? If you want to leave a wet towel on the floor when you leave home as an adult, you can, because that's not what I care about. It really is what I care about, but that's my idol. You've got to know yourself and know God. And so I want to major on the majors. And if that means your room is just a disaster zone, I've got to learn to actually let that one go and allow you to make decisions for yourself, because the goal of parenting is for them not to need you. That is, the goal of parenting is actually that they live out their own fear and love of the Lord. So just recapping.
Goes to the exercise.
We do have a... What we might do, actually,
we might jump
over that one.
And we'll go back and leave the exercise up there.
We're just going to have fiddy up, if I can remember how to... We're just going to finish with a couple of tips and then throw to any questions. Here are just some things. There's lots of things that we could tell you not to do. That's a super long list. So we've just got a couple of things that we really enjoy doing with our kids. Lots of these were just advice given to us, and so we thought we'd pass them on to you. And the first one is time. As an adult, you're responsible for your time, and this is one of the best ways to parent, is actually show kids how to use time well. So do your job, do your work, but don't be a workaholic, and it's on you if you are. You want to model following Jesus to your teenage kids. So you want to work, you want to be involved in your church, you want to look after yourself physically. You actually want to have time to do your own evangelism, and you want to have enough time to spend with them so they actually enjoy being around you. You have to guard your time, and that's one of the most precious gifts that you can give to your teenager.
And the time that they want to spend with you is really the times that you want to go to bed, or you want to do something else, or you're just about to make a phone call that's really important. But yeah, showing them that they're important, and going back to that listening. They'll only talk to you if you can listen, and if you don't open your ears to them, then they'll stop talking.
And this is an area where I got into trouble, an area where I just wasn't doing a great job. And so we've got a couple of photos in there of me and my son at the cricket. And the reason those photos are up there is because my son was seeing a psych, life wasn't working for him. Eventually, I got called into the principal's office. He didn't go in. It was just me and the psych.
The psych
said, "Fine, you know, I can actually tell you what he wants you to know now. It's been a number of weeks. Everything is your fault. Everything is your fault." And that was my son's perspective of his life. Everything was my fault. That is, my parenting at that time was actually something that he was just hating. He actually saw me as the bad guy. And so what was the way forward? I had to go out of my way to actually become someone that he enjoyed spending time with. And some of your kids you might naturally find that with, but some kids that might be less natural. And so you have to have the time and the resources. Your kids have to want to spend time with you, and that's on you. So you've got to have the time and the commitment to do that.
Meals together, I thought it was interesting, Rory talking a little bit about his family meals. We're actually at the point where it's hard for us to have a family meal now. Someone's working, someone's got some uni group, I might be working, sport, that kind of thing. But when we have meals together, we used to have highs and lows, and then we got low.
So
we stopped having lows. It's only highs, so we only do highs. And if anyone ever joins us for lunch or dinner, they have to join in as well. And that's just one way. That's just a communicating. We get to know each other. We know what's going on in each other's lives, which is good. Memories and traditions. So just that same kind of thing. Spend time with them. Still plan family holidays. It's sometimes hard to find them, but find them and make good memories.
And good traditions. Christmas, Easter, they're really fantastic traditions. So it's just normal.
Yeah, come here.
We play the truth game with our kids. Now, this one's a little bit edgy, but what we want our kids is to be able to come to us and be honest. Mm. But we've got a model. I actually think that's a lot of what parenting is. So how do you model being honest to your kids? Well, come up with the idea of be honest. And so we play the game, the truth game, where they get to ask us whatever they want and we'll tell the truth. So we're actually modelling honesty to our kids. But the really cool bit is it's a game, so we get a turn. So they get to ask us a question, we get to ask them a question, and it's a little bit funny, it's a little bit risky, because a lot of the time you've actually got to go, you know what, I have done that and I shouldn't have, and you're being honest and you're modelling your failings to them. You're actually saying, yes, I did do that, and I wish I hadn't. So we play the truth game. It's a great way to build trust, and it's super scary.
Relationships, do you want to ask?
Look, talking about your relationships, you do need to be aware of their world. And, of course, a huge influence going on in teenagers at the moment is the LGBTIQA+ space. If you're going to raise teenagers, you need to be aware of that influence. And you actually need to be able to be aware of some of the positive effects of actually those ideas. They are a reaction to something, and they're going to be getting told at school lots of things about those issues. You need to be aware of the issues, and you actually need to have some positive ideas about actually how good it is now that people don't have to necessarily pretend. That people have the right now to tell you who they think you are, and if you truly want to get to know someone, you have to listen. I'm sure you're aware perhaps of some of the negative effects of that movement, but actually being up to speed on what the movement is and actually not trashing everything about it, because their world is super positive. And so you need to find at least towards LGBTIQ, so you need to find at least some touchstone moments, I think.
Suggest to connect your Christian teens with Christian teens. So if you've got teens here, that's awesome. We send our kids to Christian camps. We met on a Christian camp, so we're kind of fans of that. Just surrounding your kids with other kids who are going to talk Christian language with them.
And different spheres. So your church doesn't have to be the only sphere. You might act, it's normal not to get along with everybody. And so just finding them different networks of Christian friends, that's just a fantastic thing to do.
Be a parent, not a friend. So that's a hard one. You are their parent. And while there'll be a bit of a friend relationship there at times, you've got to watch that you're not stepping into the friend bracket, sharing things with them that maybe is not where their brain's at. They don't have an adult brain yet. And so protecting them a bit from that, but also making sure you've got friends, which, you know, we've all got so much time to do that. But it's really important. It's really important.
And, of course, the theology behind that is you're there to serve them. That's what leadership is. It's you're authorised to serve. And so you're there to serve them. You're the parent. They're not there to serve you. They're not there to make you feel better about yourself. Unity, not uniformity. Look, Anna and I do agree on some things, just not many. And that actually can be a strength. So again, Ephesians 3, we're called to unity, not uniformity. It is actually okay to disagree as parents. It's actually okay to back the other's play, even when you disagree with it. You're a team. You're going to come together and talk about what to do, but you don't necessarily need to agree with everything that your kids are going to do. It is actually okay to disagree, perhaps just not in front of them. Have the conversation first, talk to one another. The idea is Christian unity, but not uniformity. We don't steamroll over the differences in one another.
And be a role model.
So
forgive them. They are going to stuff up. And when they come to you and they tell you they've stuffed up, you need to forgive them. And when you stuff up, go and ask for their forgiveness. That's a pretty hard one. I've had to do that a number of times. Doesn't feel good. But we're modelling what we should be doing with Jesus and what he's done for us. So that's a pretty big one for us.
Love before repentance. Mm-hmm. They will hurt you in ways you just have no idea about yet, but you're going to love them before they repent. In fact, you're going to love them whether or not they repent, and you're going to love them in the way that our Father has loved us. I think that's... finally, actually have fun. Do value enjoying your kids. You want them to want to spend time with you. You actually don't get extra brownie points if your kids hate you. So try to have fun with them.
So it's just taking you back to the goal that we set at the beginning. Now, the goal of parenting is to raise God's kids and ours to become self-aware servants of Christ. Cool. That's it. We've gone over time.
There's no one to hand off to, so thanks for coming along.
We did have a list of resources, but I don't know if that's it's probably too small. If anyone wants a copy of that, we could probably send it through. But there were just some books. Some of them are Christian, some of them are non-Christian, but we mentioned a few of them throughout the talk. And they're just some – I'm a bit of a podcast listener, stick things in my ears, and there's some that I've found really helpful. And I'll point Parenting Today's Teens by Mark Gregston. He works with very, very troubled teens. So if you've got a very troubled teen, he is really lovely in your ears through those things.
And the only other book I might draw your attention to is in terms of getting to know yourself, if I can highlight the book Grow Yourself Up by Jenny Brown. That's a fantastic book to help you get to know yourself, your idols, and why you do the things that you do, and help you figure out the difference between what I do because I'm me and what I do because I'm a Christian. Very helpful book. Otherwise, thank you, and feel free to come and chat if you'd like to.
Thanks.